So on Daf Ches Amud Aleph, the Gemara at the top of the Amud spoke about Eis Ratzon, that the Pasuk says in Tehillim, Vanis Filosi L'cha Hashem Eis Ratzon, that in the context of Tefillah, David HaMelech says that there's something called an Eis Ratzon, and the Gemara identifies the Eis Ratzon as B'shah Hashem Ispalim Shatzibur Mispalim, meaning he links up to the Tzibur, and therefore his tefillah is much more acceptable. It has much more of a power to it. And Rabbi Yossi learns the same, draws the same conclusion from a different pasuk in Yeshayahu and Navi. Ko Amar Hashem bi Eis Ratzon Anisicha. Anisicha means in Lashon Yachid. So Hashem here is addressing the individual. He's not davening together with his Tzibur, but yet Hashem is responding to his tefillah because it's an Eis Ratzon. So when is that? That's the time that the tzibur is mispalmed. So a person could be anywhere on the face of the earth, but if he synchronizes his tefillah with the moment that the tzibur is davening, then he dips into the benefit of an Eis Ratzon. When the tefillah, when the tzibur is mispalmed, it's an Eis Ratzon. The Mefarshim will ask the question, well, wouldn't it be fair to say that with the clock, you know, in the world, if you take the whole world, there's always a tzibur davening somewhere? So the Mefarshim say that we're talking about a case of a city. He can link up to the members of his city. When it comes to Beis HaKnesses, when it comes to all the laws of establishing a synagogue, it's the city that determines or engenders that obligation. In fact, we can tax every single member of the community to chip in for the building of a Beis HaKnesses. And the word Knesses means to join together, Miloshen Kinus, and we assemble together as one Tzibur. Now it's interesting that if you read this Gemara, it doesn't seem to indicate anything about the mental attitude of a person as he links up to the tzibur. It doesn't seem, you know, the Gemara doesn't say a word about how important it is to daven with the tzibur. The Gemara seems to assume now that it's important and it's beneficial and more effective for the tefillah if you daven at the moment that the tzibur is mispalmed. Like, that's an Eis Ratzon. And we had full sugyas before that there's something called a shazam within the so to speak, the calendar of the 24 hours of each day. Now we're setting up an Eis Ratzon. You know, and every city has an Eis Ratzon for that city. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the gates are, so to speak, open. But if you look at the next Gemara, the Gemara quotes a Bryce in the name of Rav Nosson, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu accepts the tefillah of the Rabbim. There's some sort of special power to the tefillah of the Rabbim. And therefore the Gemara goes ahead and encourages you to be mispalel imat tzibur. And if you daven with the tzibur, you're guaranteed a pigeon, you're guaranteed a redemption. And I looked here in Rav Kook, in his Ein Ayah, and he writes here, again, we're not going to read through the whole text, but he said that tefillah, people think of tefillah as something that's a little bit self-centered, and he says that's a wrong attitude. It's not just that I am asking Hashem for my needs, for my personal needs. He says it goes way beyond that. It has to do with linking up with the tzibur. And he says the yesod of tefillah is what he calls hayesod ha-musari. Musari means when I have a religious and ethical connection to other people. Ha-adam mishutaf. He partners up with other people in terms of what happens now, in terms of what's going to happen in the future, in terms of the life of a family, and also the life of the society in general. So therefore a person has to realize that he has to do whatever he can for the sake of the tzibur. And ikar tefillah v'tachlisa, he goes very far here. He says the main purpose and the goal of tefillah is not hashlamat adam bi'atzmo, not just his, you know, caring about his own perfection, but rather, he says, "Mipnei kibbutz hatziburi." I don't think he means the kibbutz that we know of today, but he means that the life, the musar life, he calls it chayim ha-musarim, is part of the chevra itself. the entire community. And therefore, tefilas rabim hi tefilah ha'ikarit. The main tefillah is to daven together with the tzibur. And tefillas yachid can also be meaningful if he's mitchaber im tzibur, if he links up to the tzibur. But the real tachlis, he says, the first primary goal of tefillah that has the most powerful is when a person is davening for the tzibur, together with the tzibur. His whole mental attitude is that tefillah is not just... See, we think of tefillah as something that's bein adam lemakom. You know, you would be hard-pressed to classify tefillah as bein adam lechavero. But I think within the context of this presentation, tefillah primarily is bein adam lechavero. It means to live chayim musarim, and chayim musarim requires that you care more about your fellow Jew, perhaps, than even yourself. And that's what he calls hayisoda musarihu she'adam mishutaf el zulato mibnei adam. He has to link up with others. So it's not just, as we saw it in the Gemara, an ace ratzon. It's not just that this is a precipitate, this is a very good time to daven, but more than that, this is primary in the focus of tefillah. Tefillah is not just a religious ceremonious act that we're involved in our connection with the one above. It's primarily integrated into the entire community. That's what prayer is. And that, I think, is a great introduction to Reish Lakish that we want to learn now. Reish Lakish is the beginning of the wide lines here on Daf Chesam and Aleph. Om Reish Lakish, Mishi Yeshlo Beit Knesset Be'iro. If there is a synagogue in his city, the Eino Nichna Shom L'Spalel, but he doesn't join the Tzibur and pray in that synagogue, is Nikra Shachin Ra. He's a bad neighbor. Now, what does this mean? Here we have a fundamental machlokus in two roads here, two different approaches to this concept. One approach, which I think is a little bit more challenging, more difficult, is Shochein Ra Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And this is going to be the approach of many of the Mefarshim. You're a Shochein Ra of HaKadosh Baruch. Now, what does it mean that I'm a bad neighbor of God? I mean, God doesn't live in my neighborhood. And what am I doing, that has a bad impact on Hashem? So if you take this Shochein Ra of HaKadosh Baruch, literally, you really have a challenge. And we'll try to come back to this and try to make sense out of it. But perhaps an easier way of learning this Gemara is the second pshat, and that is Shochein Ra Shel Klal Yisrael. He's not a good neighbor of the people who live in his proximity. And that's what a Shochein Ra is. A Shochein Ra is someone who doesn't join together with others, he doesn't visit others if they're sick, he doesn't care about others. And that's what he says here in the name of the Prisha. The Prisha is one of the super commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch. He says, Adam shalo bo lebeit kneset shebi'iro nase shochein ra lebrios hadorim imo bi'iro. He's a bad neighbor to those who live in his city. And why is that so? He writes, Bipneshu gorem shashchina eina shora aleihem. Hashchina eina shora aleihem. In other words, when the people of the city get together, they want to bring the Shechina down to the Beit HaKnesset. And anytime someone joins them, there's a greater chance that the Shechina will come and reside in the Beis HaKnesses. For example, imagine the following scenario. Let's say there are 9 people that show up in shul, and you're the 10th, but you're not interested in coming. That makes you into a Shochein Ra. That's the most extreme case. It doesn't have to be that way, but that would be an extreme case. And along the lines of the Prisha is the Maral Miprag. The Maral Miprag says that Beit HaKnesset hu makom muchan shebo mitasfim bnei ha'ir lispalel yotzvam. the entire city gathers together in one place, in a Beit Knesset, for the purpose of tefillah. V'im eino nichnas l'sham nikra shachim rak yuporesh u'misrachek mishar shcheinav. He's what you call a poresh min hatzibur. He's not willing to join together with the tzibur. Eino rotzel lit asev ulit palel imohem. And therefore he's a shachin ra. That's whenever the community gets together for something, and a person says, I'm not interested, he, in a sense, puts himself higher than the tzibur, he's called a shachin ra. And if we go back to the Gemara of Reish Lakish, Reish Lakish builds his conclusion on a pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi. Shenemar, what does Yirmiyahu say? Now keep in mind that Yirmiyahu is prophesizing to a large extent about the exile, the future exile of the Jewish people. At this point, the people are located in Eretz Yisrael, but they're surrounded by what we would call very, very bad neighbors. You know, the neighbors, the animosity from the neighbors is intense. And he says, Ko amar Hashem, al kol shcheinai haroim, on all these enemies who are very, very bad neighbors, hanogim b'nachla asher hinchalti es ami es Yisrael. The word nogim here, which literally means to touch, has another meaning. It could also be pogim. Pogim means they attack. The nachla means our portion, the portion of Israel. And these are the enemies that surround Eretz Yisrael, and they try to persecute the Jews and attack them. They are called by HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shcheinai Haroim, my bad neighbors. And this is based, I think, on a concept which Rashi speaks about in Chumash. In Bamidbar Perek Yud, that's in Parashas Baal Loska, it says, V'yonusu misanecha miponecha. And these are the enemies of Klal Yisrael. And Rashi says that the enemies of Klal Yisrael are the enemies of Misha Omar V'hoya Olam, of God Himself. In other words, Rashi postulates an equation here, or the law of, you know, of transmutation. In other words, if A hates B, then by definition he hates C. If the enemies of the Jewish people hate the Jewish people, then by definition they are enemies of Hashem. That's how Rashi says it in Chumash. And that seems to be reflected in this pasuk, because Hashem calls them Shcheinai Haroim. They are my bad neighbors. And why? Because they're Nogim B'Nachla, they're attacking the Jewish people. Now, who are these neighbors? Who are these bad enemies with the animosity to the Jewish people? So first of all, we have the Plishtim. We have Ammon, Moab, Tsur, Vitzinon. These were all the neighboring countries that were Mazik Klal Yisrael. And therefore they're called Shechenai. They are called the neighbors because they're like Shechenim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the sense they live in close proximity, because Klal Yisrael is considered the Chelek, they're like the vineyard of Hashem. So this is God's own portion here on earth, and that's called Eretz Yisrael. These are the enemies of the Jewish people, their neighbors, they border on Israel, and they persecute the Jews. Out of enmity, they attack the Jews. That animosity is really animosity towards the Almighty, towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and therefore God calls them Shcheinai Haroim. And it's fascinating to me that, for example, on Purim, after the Megillah reading, we read a bracha, we recite the Dones Dinenu V'Raves Rivenu V'Nokem Es Nikmasenu, and there it means that these are the enemies of the Jewish people, are really the enemies of Hashem. Hashem will judge them and punish them because they are really enemies of God. And this is an interesting pasuk, because the pasuk itself is really divided up into two parts. If you take a look at the next line in the Gemara says, "Vlo od ela shegoreim golus lo ulabanov." If he doesn't come to the synagogue to pray, he will ultimately be punished with golus. He'll be exiled. not only him, but also his children. We have to figure that out. But it's interesting, Shenemar, how do we know this? And he quotes the very same pasuk that we learned, that we started with, but just the last half of the pasuk. And the last half of the pasuk says, Hineni nocham me'al admasam, I will exile them from the land, meaning of V'esbeis Yehuda etosh mitocha. This is a very harsh language that foretells exile, and it's the sefer of the pasuk, the reish of which is talking about Shechinai Haroim, all those nations that attacked the Jewish people that we mentioned before. And in the very same pasuk, Yirmiyah shifts to Jews who will be Chayav Golos, because they are also Shechinim Haroim. In other words, when the pasuk begins and opens in the ratio with Shechinai Haroim, it's referring not only to the nations of the world who persecute the Jews, but also to Jews themselves. Which Jews? Jews who refuse to be part of the Tzibur. And specifically, they don't come to the Beis HaKnesses to pray. Now, in the light of everything we've said in this approach, that Shechinai Haroim, that when Reish Lakish says that a person doesn't come into Davin is called a Shachin Ra, it's a Shachin Ra Shel Yisrael, by not joining together with the people, now we're ready, I think, for the other, for the second parish. And that is Shachin Ra Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now, how can a person be considered a bad neighbor of God? What does that mean? So he says in the name of the Rif, in the name of the Rivav, he says, Kevon She'eno Bo Lehisros Imo V'Beis Shechinoso. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there in the Beis HaKnesses. That's where his Shechina resides. And this individual refuses to come into the house of Hashem. He says, Derech Shechinim HaTovim, a good neighbor, Sha'ovim Zedzeh, he has a love for his neighbor. He wants to get close to his friend. Then he goes to visit him on a regular basis. But a Shachin Ra is someone who is not interested in that relationship. He has no great feelings of love. He doesn't cherish the opportunity to embrace his neighbor and get close to him. No. He wants to stay away. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. This is the Beis Hashem. And he's waiting for you to come and show up. So if you don't show up in the shul, which is the makom of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're a Shachin Ra. Shachin Ra means a neighbor who's not interested in a relationship with his next door neighbor. And in this case, if you're in the city and you don't come to the Beis HaKnesses, you are a next door neighbor of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because the Shechin itself is in the Beis HaKnesses. And therefore, if you don't show up in the shul, you are considered a Shachin Ra. Shachin Ra is someone who refuses to have a relationship with the Shechin. So again, just to summarize, we have two different, radically different approaches to how to interpret that phrase, Shachin Ra and Reish Lakish. Is he doing evil and damaging the people in the community? He's a Shachin Ra of Klal Yisrael, who, in this case, live in the city because he, by coming... You see, when a person doesn't come to shul, he sees it as beino levein atzmo. Yeah, it's his own personal thing. If anyone is being damaged by it, it's me, myself, and I. Okay, I didn't come to shul. Name, that's what Reish Lakish wants to come, lafuki. And he wants to establish just the opposite. That by not coming to shul, you are doing damage to the other people. They need you in shul. Every person who comes to pray in the shul adds something. He brings the Shechina. And as we saw before, he prays together with the Tzibur on behalf of the Tzibur. This guy's not interested. He's a hermit. He's parish minatzim. He puts himself on a higher level. I remember in my youth, there was a family that lived on our block. My father was the rabbi of the shul. They refused to come to shul. Never. They would mow the lawn on Shabbos publicly and everything. That was what I'd call an example of a shachin ra. We need you in the shul. We need every last person. Same thing as Torah learning also. You know, Rebbe gives a shiur and he expects the Talmidim to show up. And every Talmud who comes adds another dimension to the experience of the Chabura learning. He doesn't want to come. So he's thinking to himself, okay, I won't come. That's my problem. Nobody has to suffer as a result. But that's not it. So I always remind myself of the story, the mashal they give about two people in a boat. And one guy starts drilling a hole. They're out in the water. So the other guy starts screaming at him, "We're going to drill." He says, "I'm only drilling it on my side of the boat." You know, but we're all in the same boat here. In Hebrew, we would say, "Kulanu b'sira achat." We're all in the problem together. We need every last one. And have you ever read Dr. Seuss? Did you read a book called Horton Hears a Who? Do you remember that one? Yeah, it's the elephant that they need that everyone should be screaming and blowing bugles and everything, and this, and they're not doing it. They're not accomplishing. And then they find this little guy Horton, you know, this little pinsicle of a guy, and he's not blowing. And they finally get him to blow, and then Horton hears the who, you know. Every single last person participates. So that's one approach. And the other approach is that you're a shachin ra'al HaKadosh Baruch Hu because you have a chance of getting close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You don't take advantage of that. That is a shachin ra. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is waiting for you and you're not there. And the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu talks about Nachla. Nachla is a reference to the Beit Knesset. And the reason for that is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is there. That's his Nachla. Nachla Hashem. That's his portion. Elokim Nitzav Adas Kel. What does that refer to? That refers to the Beis HaKnesses. He quotes here in the note a sefer called the Bris Avram. The Bris Avram says that the word Nogim in this Pasuk is Miloshen Nega. Nega means like tsaras. You know, if somebody is a leper, that's called he's stricken by a Nega. And this person who refused to come to shul, he's called Nogim B'Nachla. If the Nachla is a reference to the Beis Knesses, he determines or he describes the Beis Knesses, at least mentally, as a Nega. You know what? It's off bounds for me. It's a leper. I have to stay far away from the leper. I don't want to go into a Beis HaMenugo, it's called, a place which is contaminated. This is the terrible thing that he's saying about the shul, about the synagogue, about his connection to the community. And if he does so, then he deserves Mida Keneged Mida. What's the Mida Keneged Mida? He deserves Golus. You know why? Because he's not willing to establish himself together with the community in his city. And the Pasuk is referring to Eretz Yisrael. He himself deserves to be sent into Golus. Why? The Beis HaKnesses, which is a place where the entire Jewish community gathered together, a person who doesn't want to gather together with the Tzibur, he deserves to be spread out on the face of the earth. Put him in exile. And what about the Golus on his Zera? Why do his children deserve Golus? And the only thing you could say about that is that it's not a punishment to the children. They're not guilty. It's just a natural consequence. You know, if you have a tree, and the tree has its roots in a certain place, and then the branches spread out, if you uproot the tree, then the branches also lose their connection to that particular point, you know, that particular location. Now, you can add another dimension here, and this you'll see in the Ein Yaakov. He says that if you don't come to shul, at the end of the day, you are participating in what we call siluk shechina. By going to shul, you bring the shechina there. By not coming to the shul, you cause the shechina to be mistalik, to leave it. The siluk shechina is really golus. It's a mida keneged mida here, because if you're the cause of siluk shechina, you're not coming to daven, then HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? I'll send you into golus. That's the greatest act of siluk shechina. Onesh golus means that a person is far away from the shechina. He's in exile. He's spread in the four corners of the earth. And if a person does not come to shul, he deserves the punishment of golus. He's going to have to go from place to place, and he's far away from the Shechina, because he himself could have brought the Shechina, but he failed to do so. There's a statement in the Medrash in Yalkut Shimoni that a person who doesn't go to synagogue, who doesn't attend shul, Omer Avhuna, Kol Sheinu Nichnas LeBeis HaKnesses Ba'olam HaZeh, Eino Nichnas LeBeis HaKnesses Ba'olam HaBa. According to Rav Huna, there's a double concept of Beis HaKnesses. There's one here on this earth, and there's another one in the world to come. And if you are excluding yourself from the Beis Knesset in this world, then you will be excluded from the Beis HaKnesset in the world to come, bi'olam haba. Rabbi Yochanan says that we learn this from a pasuk in Tehillim. The pasuk says, "Sviv Rishayim Yisalechun." In other words, "Sviv Rishayim Yisalechun" means the Rishayim will be circulating around the world, going from place to place. That's called exile. On the other hand, if somebody does come to shul in this world, it's as if he davened in the Beis HaMikdash, because Yechezkel calls the Beis HaKnesses a Mikdash Ma'at. So a person who gravitates towards the shul is a person who gravitates towards the Beis HaMikdash. We'll go on in the Gemara. Omalele Rabbi Yochanan. They told Rabbi Yochanan the following report. Ika Save, there are older people, Bibavel, the people who live, I don't know, maybe to older age. Some of the Mefarshim say that it's really, really old. But there were very old people living in Bavel. Tama, Rabbi Yochanan says, how could this be? It's impossible. The already declared, the Pasuk says, Laman yirbu yimeichem v'yimeinechem al ha'adama. God says as a reward, I will let you live long lives. Al ha'adama. Al ha'adama means Eretz Yisrael. Is b'chutz la'aretz, amal b'chutz la'aretz, lo. Now, Zarichas Yomim is not something, living a long life, longevity is not something that's appropriate for Chutz La'aretz. It's only appropriate for Eretz Yisrael. Now, how do we understand this? Is this to be understood on a biological level? Is this something about the atmosphere in Eretz Yisrael, the climactic conditions that's conducive to long life? I mean, we know that people live long lives all over the world. And there are two approaches in the Mefarshim. One approach is that Rabbi Yochanan was amazed when they told about these very, very old people, because they were as old as Rabbi Yochanan. They told Rabbi Yochanan, you know what? These guys are as old as you are. How old was Rabbi Yochanan? So I don't know how to interpret this, but in a book called Seder Adoros, which is a history book that's very reliable, tells us back to the Tanoim and the Amoraim, Rabbi Yochanan died at the age of 400. You ready for that one? Okay. Try that on for size. What'd he say?
There's a story with Reish Lakish from the start and the end. He met Reish Lakish in a pond or something.
Yeah, Reish Lakish was jumping over the waters, yeah.
And when he died, it was because he gave the eyes of Reish Lakish or something.
Because he what?
Yeah, like he gave Reish Lakish a look and Reish Lakish turned into bones or something like that.
Ah, I don't know that story, I don't know.
And then he would wind around asking for a chavruta and they couldn't find him one.
Right, that story I know. The Gemara in Nasochas HaPolim says that Reish Lakish used to ask 24 kashas on every shir of Rav Yochanan. And when Reish Lakish died, Rav Yochanan went crazy.
So did Reish Lakish get from Reish Lakish also live to be like 400?
I don't know, that's a good question. But in any event, there were people in Bavel, I don't know who they were, who were living to this old age. And Rav Yochanan said he couldn't understand how that is. You know, these were... if they would have told him that people live to 80, 90, I think he wouldn't be so amazed. But that there are people who live to such, extreme old age, he couldn't make any sense out of that. Now, in the Ein Yaakov, he quotes another interpretation, that it could be that biologically there is something special about Eretz Yisrael that is conducive for longevity, and that is that in other countries, the heat, he says like this, Chachmei HaTeva, they claim that Eretz Chama, the heat of a climate, of a country that's near the equator, let's say, it's very extreme hot, is antithetical to longevity. And how could it be that in Bavel, that was Rabbi Yochanan's question, where it was very hot climate, they lived to an older age. Eretz Yisrael, even though it's not a cold climate, but there's a special bracha of Laman Yirbu Yimeichem. So if not for the special blessing of Laman Yirbu Yimeichem, then Eretz Yisrael, like Bavel, would not be conducive to longevity because it's too hot. So I don't know, I don't have any access right now to scientific data about this, but that's one approach. Now, the Mefarshim want to know, there's another pasuk. This pasuk that we're reading is in Dvarim Perek Yud Aleph. Okay? There's a pasuk in Dvarim Perek Hey, which would also have led Rabbi Yochanan to the same conclusion. There it says, L'man Yarichun Yomecha Al Hadoma. The context there is the mitzvah of Kibud Avaim, which is written in the Decalogue, in the Aseret Dibros. And the Torah promises that you will have Arichas Yomim for Kibud Avaim Al Ha'adama. I mean, that's exactly what Rabbi Yochanan quotes, but from a pasuk in Perek Yud Aleph, Al Ha'adama. So why didn't he quote the earlier pasuk? That's a classical kind of question that you could ask on a Gemara. So it's interesting, there's a Sugi Kiddushin that says that that pasuk l'man yarichun yamecha in the reward for kibud avim is referring to arichus yamim li'olam shekulo aruch, not to this world but to the next world. But this pasuk here in Kriyat Shema, which says l'man yibri yamechem, is the simple pshat is we're talking about arichas yamim ba'olam hazeh, in this world. And here, you know, Rabbi Yochanan gets the word back that there are people in Belleville who are living to who knows what age. But how could that be? Because the pasuk says in Eretz Yisrael, there is this blessing of Arichas Yomim, not in Chutz Laretz. So then, they gave him an interpretation. Kevan Diamrile, they explained to them, to Rabbi Yochanan, Mekadmi umachshichi lebei knishta, that these are individuals who get up very early to come to the synagogue for shacharis, and even after Meirv they stay a little bit late into the darkness of the night, and therefore when Rabbi Yochanan heard this, Omar, he declared hainu dahani lahu, that's what gave them this brach of arichas yomim even in Chutz Laretz, because they would come early to the synagogue to daven shacharis, and they would stay late at night to daven Meiriv, and even beyond Meiriv, maybe they took out a sefer and they started reading, and that's why they deserve Arichas Yom. But the only question we have is, the pasuk itself, Arichas Yom, says Al Ha'adama, on Eretz Yisrael. So again, even if these people spent a lot of time in the synagogue, they came early and they left late, they're still living in Bavel. And the pasuk indicates that there's something unique about Eretz Yisrael, that those who dwell in Eretz Yisrael, if they do the mitzvahs properly, they'll be zochet arichas yomim, but it's got to be in Eretz Yisrael. So the Marsha is bothered by this question. And he gives the following answer. The Gemara says in Masechta Megillah that Asidim Batei Knesios Shebebavel Sheikavu Beretz Yisrael, that at the end of days, all the synagogues in Bavel will be removed from their root and reestablished in Eretz Yisrael. So if a person stands in Tefillah in Bavel, then it's as if he's standing in Eretz Yisrael. You know, in Judaism we see past, present, and future as not as three time zones, but they're all one, they all coexist simultaneously. So that now they're davening, and they come early, they leave late from the shuls in Bavel, but since those synagogues in Bavel will be established in the land of Israel, it's as if they're standing in the land of Israel already. That's the Marsha's breakthrough here. And that's why Rabbi Yochanan is calm about the fact that they lived to Arichas Yom, because they're really in Eretz Yisrael. And this is a very interesting concept, because I know that a lot of people who live in Chutz Laretz, they really desire to live in Eretz Yisrael, but for one reason or another they're prevented from doing so. It could be that tremendous desire might make it as if they are living in Eretz Yisrael, even though they're not, to a certain level, not the full recipe, but they get some element of a kiyum of living in Eretz Yisrael because they desire to live in Eretz Yisrael, just that they are anus, they are prevented from doing so because of circumstances beyond their control. And I mention this in the context of the Marsha, because the Marsha sees the people davening in Bavel, and already they're davening in Eretz Yisrael. Then the language of the Marsha is Omeidu Mispal the base Knesset Shem in Bavel, Harehuka Omeidu Mispal Eretz Yisrael. That's pretty mind boggling. Now, if you look at the next Gemara, Kida Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi Libnei, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi transmitted a legacy to his son, and what was it could be Libnei here is in plural, it means his children, and what was his last will and testament, you know, what was his, you know, every father has to tell his child, this is what I want you to continue, this is what I want you to do after I go. And what was Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi concerned about? He wanted to tell them Kadimu v'chashichu v'aylu lebei knishna. Early and late, right? The word kadima means kadimu means loshon kodem. Come there first. Chashichu is miloshon choshech. You know, to stay into the darkness of the night. V'aylu lebei knishna. As long as you're going into the shul. And why? Ki hechi detarchu chayai. And we know that as a result, you will merit arichas yomim. You'll live to a long life. Now, there's an interesting commentary here on Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and it really changes the pshat a lot. So, I wanted to go through that with you. Again, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi commands his children that they should make sure to come early and leave late. The point here is, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi did not find any need to tell his children to fulfill that which the halacha requires you. You know, there's always something that's absolutely required. Basic standards. And then there's going beyond, like we talk about Hidur Mitzvah or Mitzvah Minam Muvchar. What Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is telling his children is to do something that most people would not do. And if they do that, then for sure they're going to do that which people do. You know, in other words, if within the context of living a religious life, then by going beyond, certainly you guarantee that they'll do the basic Chiyuv. So what was he telling them to do that most people would not do? Getting up in the morning to come to shul early. Most people want to sleep. They don't want to get up early. He says, no, please be very careful. He warns them that they should be makdim to come to the shul even before other people came. And on the night department, he told them, she'achru lotzeis. I mean, people want to get out of there, you know, as quick as they can. It's already getting dark. It's Lila. And especially their synagogues were outside the city limits. Person wants to run away. He wants to flee as soon as he gets a chance. Even before he says Aleinu, he's standing at the door. And therefore, Reish Lakish says, go beyond the average Jew. Take up a noag, a minog that indicates that you really love the mitzvahs. You love the Beis HaKnesses. Stay there, you know, linger on a little bit. That's one interpretation. Now, I wanted to tell you that there's another interpretation. Kedimu v'chashichu. That means you should go into the Beis HaKnesses first and you should leave last. Kedimu is rizus, to be there first. Chashichu means ichur, to stay there latest, to linger on. But that's not what I wanted to tell you. I wanted to share with you the tour. The tour in Arachayim Simen Tzadi says Kedimu v'chashichu means hashkimu v'harivu, which means she constantly based on Knesset Baboka be'erev. Just give me a minute here, I'm sorry. Oh, b'shachar yakdimu kodem or haboker. They should get there when it's still dark out. You know, it hasn't, you know, the light hasn't broken through yet. U'be'erev yakshichu shom, which means Shalo yakdim achoshech is biyosem. Don't let the darkness settle in before you get there. but rather you should be waiting for the darkness. It's the exact opposite of what we've been saying. Until now we've been interpreting that you should stay, linger on after the tefillah is over and it's dark and it's pitch black, but you're out in the sada. Who wants to do such a thing? It might even be dangerous. The answer is yachshichu means to make sure that you are there before the choshech. Ye konsul beis haknesses kodem sheyachshach, before it gets dark. It means before the people are gathered together to daven ma'ariv. You want to be there first. So, just like at the beginning, you know, the first part of this command, he says, kedimo. Kedimo means to be makdim others, get there before the others come. So too, chashichu means get there before the others come. In the first case, it means get there before daybreak. Most people were not going to be there at that time. And the second, in the second word, chashichu means get there before it gets dark. And this is all indicative of what we call zrizus. In English, I think it's called alacrity. You know, when you have a real love and enthusiasm, you want to be the first one to come. In the case of the Nesiim of the princes of Israel, you remember that Rashi points out that the word Nesiim is chaser yud. And the reason for that is because the Nesiim were the ones who said, you know what, we're not going to jump and give a contribution for the Mishkan. We'll wait and see. If you need us at the end, after you've collected from all the people, we'll fill in the gap. And why are they punished here? Because they didn't have that zrizus. They didn't have that enthusiasm. You want to be the first one. You don't want to be the last one. You want to be the first one. Now, the question is, where do we know this from? Omar Rabbi Acha Berebi Chanina. I'm going to bring a proof from a pasuk from Yeshua ben Levi that a person should get there early and leave late. Micro, what's the pasuk? And this pasuk hopefully will prove that the reward for getting there early and staying late is going to be arichas yomim. Ashrei adam shomea li. This is already Shlomo Melch speaking. In the name of Hashem. Lishkod al dal sosai yom yom. Notice the word yom yom is a repetition. Lishmar mezuzos psachai. So in other words, he's saying ashrei. Ashrei means how fortunate a person is. Shomeli, he listens to the voice of Hashem. And lishkod means he comes very quickly to the Beis HaKnesses with a tremendous sense of enthusiasm, of urgency. And it's b'chol yom. On a regular basis. This is not something that happens one, you know, you have these occasional Jews. But no, he's first time, every time, he's very consistent. And it's Shacharis time. And what is he doing? He's considered like the Shomer Lishmar Mezuzos Psachai. He's the Shomer on the entranceways into the shul. And this means that he gets this so early and no one else is around there, he's like considered the custodian of the shul. He's protecting the shul. Or he stays there late. It's like he's guarding the openings of the shul. And he doesn't run out. So, you know, it's like the dalsos, the entryways of the shul, lishmar, are being guarded by this individual who comes there early and leaves late. And today, I don't know if we want to take this on a physical level or we want to take it on a figurative, metaphysical level, because perhaps what the Chazal are saying is that by getting to the shul and staying there even later, you are protecting the shul. Today, unfortunately, what that means in the state of Israel today is you may be protecting the shul from terrorists. I don't know. I'm not sure if that's what he means, but I don't think it would be a far stretch to say so. And again, the emphasis of Rabbi Acha here is on the double language yom yom. Why does it have to say yom yom twice? One of them is because of Akdomas Shachris, and the other one corresponds to his Akfus Biarvis by lingering on and staying even after Ma'ariv. Now we've been discussing two elements in this presentation. Number one, his enthusiasm. You know, he doesn't want to be last, he wants to be first. And number two, the fact that in a sense he becomes the shomer, the custodian over the shul, because he's there first and he's out last. However, I want to point out to you that Kli Yochar, who wrote a book called The Olos Ephraim, he explains that the word dalsosai is a very interesting word, because it said, which verb is attached in this pasuk to dalsosai? It says lishkod, lishkod al dalsosai. And then if you go on in the pasuk, he has mezuzos psachai. And there it says lishmar. So what's the difference between psachai and dalsosai? And what's the difference between lishmar and lishkod? And he says the following. The beginning of the pasuk is talking about getting early, getting there early for shachris. And since he's getting there early for the shachris, who shoked umemayer lovel beis hakneses. And this is what's called lishkod al dalsosai. It means that the doors of the shul, which are called dalsosai, and he now is getting there early. He's memayer lovel beis hakneses kevish makdav adi motzivus adel skura dain lishkod al dalsosai. Right, he's the one who's opening the doors of the shul in the morning. I don't know if he has a key. That's a question. And then the next part of the pasuk says that he waits, he postpones leaving the shul arvis time at night. He's not fleeing from the shul as soon as he can. You know, the shotgun went off and he's running. But rather, lishmar mezuzos psochai. What does this mean? At this point, they're locking up the shul because it's nighttime. But they haven't yet locked the shul because they're going to wait until the last fellow leaves the shul. And if he remains in the shul and he postpones his exit from the shul, then basically what he's doing is he's the one who's guarding the mezuzos haPesach. He's the one who's seeing to it that the shul remains open a little bit longer. And he's there as the supervisor overseeing the Beis HaKnesses. Now, Rav Acha quotes a second pasuk. And this pasuk is also right there in the same place in Mishlei, but it's the very, very next pasuk. Because keep in mind, we haven't yet proven from the first pasuk that the reward for being there early and leaving late is Arichas Yomim. But if you look at the very next pasuk, it says Ki Motzi Matzah Chayim. Motzi means a person who comes to Beis HaKnesset and he finds HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because as we said before, the Beis HaKnesset is where the Shechina is Shorah. And as a result of being a Motzi, of finding Hashem, Matzah Chayim, he finds life and he will be Zochet to Arichas Yomim. You mean called Dichvan Yesev Yichol? You mean that we go out to the Pesach? Is that what you meant? Oh, Pesach itself, yeah, with the Samach. Yeah, it's like the word Pesach here with the Tav. You mean Matzah? Motzei Matzah. It's Matzah, but we could call it Matzah. Right? On Pesach, he finds the Matzah. Which literally is translated as meaning that when a person goes into a shul, he should enter into two entranceways. That doesn't make any sense. Would it really, should we take this literally, that a person has to go into two different entranceways? When he goes into one, he comes out, and he goes into the second one. What is this all about? And the Gemara says, Ella Ema, but rather it means Shi'ur Shnei Psachim. We're talking about a width or a length, I don't know what you'd call it. Like, let's say, for example, every Pesach is open let's say, 4 amos, right? If you take the width between the two walls, it's 4 amos. And Shnei Pesachim, therefore, would be 8 amos. Let's say if you take it that way. Well, no, that doesn't make any sense, what I just said, because 4 amos is the equivalent of about 8 feet. You know, I'm looking at this door, and the door is probably, my wife would know this better than I do, it's about, would you say it's about 2 feet or maybe 2.5 feet? Something like that. Okay. Now, if it, let's assume that this opening is about the size of an amma. There are 6 tfachim in an amma. So Shnei Pesachim would be the shear of 12 tfachim. Do you follow my point? So he says here, in the name of the Hagos Habach, that a regular Pesach is arba tfachim. Not the way I said it, 6 tfachim, but 4 tfachim. And therefore, if you double that, you end up with 8 tfachim. And this is quoted in various sources, that the amount of time, which is equivalent to the shir roch of Shnei Pesachim, is the amount of time that it would take to walk 8 tfachim. But then the Bach says that there are those who had a different text, and according to them, the shir rochav of Shnei Pesachim is 8 amos. Like I told you before, that the Pesach is 4 amos, and Shnei Pesachim therefore is 8 amos. Now, I can't even imagine an opening that's 4 amos wide, unless you're talking about, you know, have you ever seen that they have these entranceways that are very, very wide? You know, there's almost like a stone frame entering into a big building. So let's think about 8 amos. Now, if 8 amos would be, let's say, from here to there, would be about 8 amos, and just maybe that's even more than 8 amos, but how long would it take to walk 8 amos? It would take a few seconds. You know, it's not, you can't just snap your finger. So what we want you to do is, we want you to sort of linger in the shul before you sit down and daven. That's what he says, Shnei Pesachim, the Acher Kach Yispal. In other words, he shouldn't daven immediately as soon as he comes into the shul, because again, he has to sort of clear his brain, and he wants to focus on his davening. He wants to indicate that, you know, davening is a very, very strong, a very profound experience, and therefore he should not just jump into it, but give himself a little time. V'lo yemayer lispalel miyad b'knisoso lebeis hakneses. So this again, the Bach that we mentioned before, that he shouldn't quickly, urgently start davening. You know, some people come late to shul, right? I know, for example, in the shtibel that I daven in, it's like a minion factory in Har Nof. You know, people, tons of people, they come right in, and that, you know, there's already a minion davening, they jump right in. Really what you're supposed to do is, instead of rushing to start davening, yeshev ma'at, he should sit down a little bit. Kideshes tisyashev daito olav. Right? Because again, if he's going to daven immediately, he's like showing, he's demonstrating that he wants to get over with this. You know, let's get on with life. You know, I'm going to chaperein the quickest davening that I can get. This is a weight on my shoulders. I'm not, you know, I want to get out of there as fast as I can. So this is what the Gemara means, that he shouldn't be memayer, but rather he should be masha before he starts davening, indicating that, you know, he's like preparing for davening. He's clearing his head from all his worries, and he's ready to focus on his tefillah. However, there's another way of interpreting this Gemara, and that is that not that he should go in and wait the amount of time that it would take to walk through these 2 psachim. But rather, this is a Yerushalmi, that the synagogue itself should have 2 psachim. What does that mean? It doesn't mean an entrance on the left and an entrance on the right. Like sometimes you have an Ezra's Noshim and an Ezra's Anoshim. No. He means to say that it's important that a shul have a, I don't know what you want to call it, like
a vestibule,
is that what you call it? I think so. I think that's what it means. In the base, the Yerushalmi says in the base on Migdash, there were two dlosos. You know, you didn't go right into the Azara, but rather, first you had an ulam, and then you went into the Heichal where the Azara was. And so too, our shuls should imitate, they should be duplicates of the base HaMikdash. And the reason for this is because, let's say, for example, you wanted to see the king, a human king. You don't just go in and see him. First, you get the second in command, the Eved Shel HaMelech, the servant, to sit down with you and tell you, wait for your next. Right? So you wait in the waiting room. You don't go straight into the Heichal. Here also, when it comes to the Melech Malchim HaMelechim, we want to indicate that we're not going to jump right into, you know, to ask and put forward our petitions. First, we're kaviyachol waiting for the green light for the license to go in. So we have to be calm and sort of take a little bit of a delay tactic as we wait for the Melech Malchim HaMelechim to have an audience with the king. But he goes beyond this. The Yerushalmi says that the shul should duplicate the Beis HaMikdash. But the Bach adds another point over here. He says the following, that sometimes a person who wants to have an audience with the king doesn't actually go into the king to put forth his supplication, but rather the Eved Shel Melech receives the supplication, the request, and he, the Eved, brings the request to the king. But that's not something that we can apply to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Melech Malchim HaMelechim, because we don't pray to anyone who's going some sort of conduit, some sort of an intermediary who's going to take our prayers to the king. Our tefillos, and this is very fundamental in our beliefs, go straight to the king. There's no malach, there's no saraf, there are no intermediaries whatsoever. And that's one of the fundamentals of our faith, which has to be demonstrated. How do we demonstrate this? L'horos al amuna zu shonu mevakshim HaKadosh Baruch Hu bi'atzmo tzorech odom likonis lifnim b'shtei dlosos. He goes inside two dlosos, laharos sha'afshu omed b'knisa lebeis ha'kneses. Even though he's on the outer chamber and he hasn't yet entered into the Beis HaKnesses, Einu mevake she'iloso al yedei misharseyam elchem misharseyam elef. He's not going to linger in the outer chamber so that some eved, some intermediary, will bring his tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But he goes through the traklin, through this vestibule, and Hu nichnas lebeis HaKnesses atzmo, he goes into the shul himself. He didn't ask anyone on the outside to bring his prayers forward. He's mevakesh. He asks Hashem yeshiros directly for his supplication. The Mishnah Berurah actually mentions this in a footnote in Aruch Chaim Siman Tzadi, and he writes that it is our minhag all over the place to have this entryway before we go into the shul. And this he calls the Azara. And he says that Tov, it's very important, L'chatchila, Lolis Palal Ba'azara. Not to daven on the outer chamber, but rather to go through the outer chamber and then enter into the shul, into the sanctuary itself. And finally, he quotes the Maral Miprag. The Maral says that just like we have two concepts, like Sur Mira and Asay Tov, when a person comes into davening, he needs to go through two stages. First, he has to sort of cut himself off, clear his head from all the problems and the pressures of life, and then he has to focus on davening. He says that's why he goes through two psachim. In the first Pesach, that gives him a minute of time to cut himself off from the world and all its trials and tribulations, all its fury. And now he's ready, in a more positive sense, what I call Asei Tov, to enter into the sanctuary with the mindset that he's ready for prayer. So let's just review what we learned today. We covered two different sugyas, both about the Beis Knesses. One is Reish Lakish, who says that a person is a Shachin Ra if he doesn't enter into Daven, he doesn't frequent the Shul. And number two, we learned the sugya of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi regarding someone who lives to an old age, and even though he's in Chutz Laretz, the reason he does so, what merit does he get the longevity? Is the answer is because he comes early to the Beis HaKnesses before Shacharis, he stays late and lingers on after the late hours, after Ma'ariv, and the Gemara Darshan's a pasuk that he will be Zocha Motzi Matzah Chaim to life. And finally, we spoke about the fact that there's two psachim, which either means he's got to wait a while until he starts davening, give it a time, you know, to clear his brain, as we said, and not only that, but the shul itself should be structured, should be built in such a way that there's shnei psachim to parallel the Beis HaKnesses, the Beis HaMikdash. And the reason for that is you don't just go right into the Melech Malchei HaMelachim. In the case of a Melech Basav Adam, you go in the outer chamber, you ask the Eved to bring forward your petition. Chas v'shalom, we're not going to do that here. In the case of Melech Malchei HaMelachim, we're going to linger in the you know, for a moment in the Azara, right, the entryway, the outer chamber. But the ultimate goal is to go right into HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to pray to Him directly without any intermediaries. Alright, there are a number of paragraphs here in Rav Kook. We won't get to it today, but Bli Neder we'll try to get to it another time. So I hope, only if you have the time, to discuss in honor of Pesach, which is quickly arriving on us, the laws that apply to beer chametz, to getting rid of the chametz. Okay then? So that will start in about 3 minutes.
Can I ask a question about, my sister was asking me about buying matzah for the seder, but a lot of times here people invite people, but they'd rather that it brings us on.
So she asked, I'm just going to get a drink.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Thank you.